We lived happily during the war, by Ilya Kaminsky. And when they bombed other people's houses, we protested, but not enough. We opposed them, but not enough. I was in my bed. Around my bed, America was falling, invisible house by invisible house by invisible house. I took a chair outside and watched the sun. In the sixth month of a disastrous rain in the house of money, in the street of money, in the city of money, in the country of money, our great country of money, we, forgive us, lived happily during the war.
Uduasha City, where the sun is a mirror and the moon a shadow, where dancers cavort in forbidden operas, making love to forgetting and flame, where the wealthy play at war with silver swords and silken sashes, where the people mine the dead heart of a burning star for cannonballs and pipework, and where a thousand secrets hide in a forest of paper and ink. Here, the five keybearers reside, the five who know the secrets of the broken gates of death. Five. Five only. There is no sixth spire, forlorn and forgotten in the desert. There is no one who looks to the displaced, the poor and destitute and landless, whose ancestry has been stripped from them by foreign looms and foreign sparcraft, and no one has ever heard of the House of Endings. But this is their story. Their roots pulled up and burned, they stand in filth up to their necks. And that is precisely why they must keep their heads ever high. Welcome to Uduasha, immigrant. May it fear the name of the house you will build. Welcome to Desperate Attune, an actual play podcast about characters with their identities in peril, played by an international cast devoted to fiction-first gaming, collaborative world-building, and complex character drama. Welcome back to Desperate Attune, everyone. Today we are a little bit short on, I was going to say manpower, but tree power. We are a little bit short on tree. And we will be wrapping up from last session being the score in which the Rising Moon School confronted the Falling Star School, not by means of direct violence, but by going up there and attempting to have a talk with Ankia the Veiled while she was attending an opera with the Blue Smoke Troupe, an opera performance. And it went fairly well. Two of the Falling Star Sword School people were talked out of attacking the Rising Moon, those being Shah the Golden Blade and Ranveer the Black Blade. But at the very last moment, the demon known as the Pus of Ixis, Scab of Ixis, Dirt under Ixis's Feet, made a play to try and kill Ranveer and was foiled. And the effect of this is that the Ankia the Veiled, the one of the three Ustads of the Falling Star Sword School, is now aware that there is demonic meddling and interference going on. And sort of the payoff of this score will be getting to have a meeting with her. So we're actually going to start this session somewhat unorthodoxly with the payoff from the last score. Have I missed anything that either of the people present want to add? Chloe, Salty, and Adiat.
That was everything.
Just that we absolutely wrecked Chobino's reputation. I think that's important to establish.
Ah, yeah.
And yes. Now he's taking revenge on Mushvik.
Yes.
Ah, yes.
Yes. You wrecked his reputation in front of Shah, at least.
Mm-hmm. And yes. Now Mushvik is being slapped by fish.
Yes. That is also a thing which has happened.
Yes.
So.
We say Mushvik. We mean Captain Mackerel.
Yes.
Diagony.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's still incognito, of course. I will point out that Cherubino, it's actually a good thing that Cherubino is just slapping you around because you are wanted. But. Speaking of wanted and stuff, let us quickly handle the mechanical fallout
yes.
of the last score. So first of all, the crew earns 2 rep per score. If the target of the score is higher tier, take 1 rep per tier higher. And I think it's fair to say that the target here is the sword school itself, right? Because you're trying, your goal is to split them up. So they are the direct targets of this in a kind of roundabout way. They are tier 3, and you are tier 1. So you take 4 rep.
Yay!
Oh boy.
Are you adding it?
Yes, I have done so.
Yes, thank you.
I was born to add things, Chief.
Yes, good. The crew normally earns coin for a score. The question is if there is any coin on the line here. I have trouble seeing there. Normally, I think it's nice when there's some coin involved with every score. This score, I just cannot see it making any sense.
Maybe a claim? I don't know if we establish any sort of like turf with the Blue Smoke troop, because we've done a few scores on their performances.
Mm-hmm. I don't think a claim is appropriate here, because that involves pissing someone off, and you have basically only made friends. So I think how we'll frame it is this is basically just a blow against the people making war on you.
Okay.
I think that's a logical way to frame it. I don't, you know, this is a score you did in self-defense, and you have successfully defended yourselves, and that's basically it.
Okay.
Like, normally I think either coin or a claim, but in this case, you're making progress in the war instead. That's what's happening. You do take heat, though.
Yay.
And what do we want to say about this? Smooth and quiet, low exposure. I think contained standard exposure here. There was some sword fighting, but it was like kept more or less within the framework of a performance. Right? So I think two
heat baseline with -2 from noble privileges.
Yes, with -2 from noble privileges, +1 for a high profile or well connected target, +1 for hostile turf. Actually, let's say it's not hostile turf because of your allies, so it's 1 heat.
But we are at war.
You are at war.
We still get the heat, don't we?
Yeah, you still get the heat from being at war. So there's 1 more.
Right on the edge.
No, you're 1 away?
Yeah.
From another wanted level? Okay, interesting.
Shall I roll for entanglement?
Yes, please do.
It's a 1.
It's a 1, and that means heat 6 plus, it's flipped or interrogation.
Okay.
So either one of the crew's PC gets interrogated, or one of the PC's rivals ranges for one of your contracts, patrons, clients, or group of customers to switch allegiances due to the heat on you. This has already sort of happened. But I think the obvious and interesting angle here is Tumdurji. Like, probably he just caves to the sumptuary law requirement. So it's not exactly that he's loyal to them. He's just in a boatload of trouble.
They try to kidnap my girlfriend. They poison my ustad, who's not really my ustad. And then they ruin an artist's life just to get at me. It's all about me.
Uh-huh.
100%.
I think it makes sense. We introduced this as an angle last time, and I think now we'll just add flip to it and just make the problem a lot worse.
Just to remind you also, two sessions ago, was it two sessions? I think it was two sessions. Al-Qadir and Khatam wanted to talk to me about Tumdurji as well. So just to remind you.
Yes. Yeah. I figured this is also why we keep spinning on this thing, because now he can give you even worse news about Tumdurji.
His dog died last night.
Of cancer.
Okay. Easy.
Trigger warning. Answer.
Yes. So, that brings us back into the action, I think. Having established a little bit what this last score means, let us return to the moment. And as Tree is not with us, and as Saida is very badly poisoned, what is logical here, and what we have decided to do, is that Saida will simply not be in very much shape to do very much at all, because she is suffering from a poisoning. So It's a very dramatic moment. She has just stumbled out, injured, and with a very discombobulated Mumtaz. And all of this is taking place, like, in the audience before the play. The play, which is still distracting people. But Ankia the Veiled is approaching you, and then Saida collapses into Bidruhi's arms. She probably didn't mean to collapse into Bidruhi's arms, knowing how proud she is. She was probably meaning to approach him and admonish him. But, you know, then she fell over.
Auntie? Auntie, are you okay? Auntie?
Saida?
Auntie?
I mean, she has very obviously been stabbed, so there is...
Clem, I respect her too much. I can't do it myself. Slap her awake.
I'm not doing that. Can you imagine what your aunt would say if I did that?
She'd probably say, oh, it's good that Bidruhi didn't get to do it or whatever. Why am I making jokes? No, she is.
I'll take her. I'll take her back. Right?
Yeah.
You deal with.
Mumtaz, are you okay?
She is pale faced and wild eyed, and her voice is croaking and dry, and she says, I don't know. I saw the outsides of the city. No, the past. Future?
Mumtaz, are you... What year is this? Do you remember me? Have you forgotten me? I am your sexy boyfriend. I say, cupping her in the face and looking her in the eye.
Yeah. He looks you in the eye and she says, they threw you into the wilderness when it was done. Yes, I remember.
Oh shit, oh fuck.
Yeah.
Oh shit, oh fuck, 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 fuck. Saida auntie, if you were awake, I would have a lot of things to say to you right now.
Yeah, she is very clearly like still dazed and confused from like the visions.
Okay.
And as all of this is happening, two things are going on. I think one is Mushfix stumbles off of stage, reeking of fish, because Cervino couldn't keep him there however long. And the other thing is, as Mushfix stumbles off the stage, he is going to see Ankia the Veiled, the Ustad of the Falling Star Sword School, descending the steps towards like the collapsed Saida, the confused Mumtaz, all of this going on. Mm-hmm. And so let's cut to Mushfix for a moment. What do you do as you finally escape Cherubino's assault?
Yes, and how that ends. I would have said that at the end of the play, like before I stumble back on, I bring out an even bigger fish to smack Cherubino with it.
Okay, yes. Very good. Yeah. So there is a fish duel going on as a result of you being dragged on stage as Captain Mackerel.
Yeah.
Who I guess in the play is just a fisherman, but you know.
Yes, and I said, now you'll see why they call me Captain Mackerel.
Yes.
I want you to know that if my girlfriend wasn't clearly having visions of past and the future, and my mentor wasn't passed out from a poisoning, and all these other things happening, I would be there at the very front row cheering you on.
Uh-huh.
I want you to know this.
So yeah. I don't actually know how big mackerels are, but I looked it up, and yeah, this is an appropriate size. Yeah, that's good.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. Uh-huh. Lovely. So you hit him with a mackerel off stage.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Now, Mushrik is Captain Mackerel's coming down. All right.
Please don't talk to Ankia the Veil, the sexiest sword fighter in the city, while holding a mackerel. Well, please do.
I can't promise that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean.
All right. I'm gonna turn up triumphant, right? He's got the golden blade off her case, put Cherubino in his place, and now with the mackerel kind of slung over his shoulder.
Yeah. Keeping it for later. It might be delicious.
Yeah. It's like
it is delicious.
It is delicious, and that's exactly what Mushfix says when he comes back in. Yes. It's like, yeah, I know what we're having for dinner, boys. and then he sees all of this and he goes, oh.
Yeah.
Okay, so Saida's bleeding out, right?
Saida is Yeah, I think Clem, who has been looking her over, I think you realize that it's not that Sada's bleeding out. I think you realize that she's been poisoned. Knowing you and your history with Tamira, the wine and drug dealer, right? I think you're pretty much familiar with, like, paralyzing poisons. In fact, you know what? It's cool here. I think you even recognize what this is. Let's just establish that you know that. Right?
That so bitch. She needs, they need help.
Yes, we should get them out of here right now.
You need to talk. I'll get her. I'll get her to safety. You talk to the Eustard, okay?
Oh, okay. Okay.
I can't promise that I wouldn't just try and kill the woman who did this to you. Saida.
What woman? I don't think we know what matter,
person,
do we?
The person who tried to... Yeah. The person who I tried to get us in through. Yeah, this has got her written all over it.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay. Clem, okay. Listen, Clem, you take care of Saidanti, okay? You take her back to the temple. Mushrik bhai!
Yes.
Please, the mackerel is... Okay, one hand on mackerel, and other hand, please take Momtaz away also to the temple. Okay, please?
And I think you don't have time to do this, because I think it's cooler if Anki arrives in the middle of this. Like, she's been descending for a while now. So as Bidrahi is frantically shouting this out, trying to, like, salvage the situation, she's just going to appear. And Ranveer will step aside. He has, like, great respect for her. And Anki has entered the situation. So she is a sex symbol in the city. She is, like, famously attractive. But I think as we see her on screen, right, I think the deal with her is it's mostly that she's a really good dresser. She has, like, a fantastic fashion sense.
Mm-hmm.
So she has these red clothes on, cut with tasteful accessories. I guess she is veiled normally, so her face is concealed artfully, and I think she's actually, like, very tall and muscular. Like,
she is.
Mm-hmm. So he strides forwards, beholds the situation, and sees, like, the downed Saida and everything. And she says to all of you, really, "You have brought a demon to my opera. I'm not best pleased with that, to be honest."
Demon? What demon? Sherekhata, have you been bringing demons around?
No demons here.
No demons here.
And Sher, you know, Mushvik turns up his pockets.
Yeah. she gestures at Bidrahi and she says, "Something did something to you. I'm not sure exactly what it was." And I think Ranveer just says in a low voice, like, "I noticed it too." As he says it, there is this tone of, like, he realizes that he was in sudden and unexpected danger.
Okay. I think this is a big moment for Bidrahi. This is a horrible moment. Lots of pressure from all around. But you know what? He's forged in the fire.
Yeah.
So I think he just says, I don't know what you are all talking about, Ranveer sir, and Ustad Ankiya, Ustad Ankiya." And then he almost falters, but then he kind of regains his composure. "I don't know what you're all talking about, but what I can say is that someone has poisoned my Ustad." And this is a big one, because this is the first time I'm acknowledging Saida as Ustad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
"Someone has poisoned my Ustad, and someone has done something horrible to my girlfriend. You see her, that hot lady? That's my girlfriend. And someone has this. These are things that I can see. These are proven. These have happened. And I demand justice. I demand satisfaction for these things. Okay?"
"Yes. Very well. I will see what I can do about your Ustad, but it will require a consultation.
Consultation for with who?
She takes a ring off her finger, like very slowly, removes one of her rings, holds it between her hands, looks you straight in the eye, and she says, Rakis. And she turns the ring slowly 3 times in her hand.
You know, it's a good thing Bidru is so angry, because otherwise he'd be like, oh shit, oh fuck, oh shit, oh fuck, oh shit, oh fuck. But yeah. anger has its own adrenaline and resolve.
Yep. House on Rakis is the patron of this sword school, and Rakis is, well, the demon prince of House on Rakis. And so she turns the ring, and she's going to do demon magic bullshit. Unless someone stops her, this is what's going to happen. Like, and stops her, I mean, like, object, because you couldn't stop her by force, but you could probably ask her to stop if you wanted to. If not, then demon magic is going to happen to Saida, who can say neither this nor that about it, because she's unconscious.
I am. I think Clem's going to say, please, we've had enough demons for today.
What demons?
And yes, and by enough, we mean none.
Bidru is genuinely confused.
We're not worthy of such of his gaze.
Well, we have been double-crossed, she says, and she like pauses and probably yeah, let's not have a roll. I think she pauses at least. She stops this like summoning ritual and she says, we have been double-crossed. I'm not sure entirely by whom, but this stabbing was not carried out by one of mine, even though there is word from up above to go after you, and now I think I understand why.
Double-crossed? Whatever do you mean, says Captain Mackerel.
Yeah. She looks down, and she says, we were not told there would be this kind of involvement. But something here reeks of the field. And she means the ghost field, of course. And looking down at Saida, I think it's like, she is a sword fighter, but I guess what we're learning here is that she is not unversed in the occult, right? She may not be a whisper herself, but she understands that powerful magic has been done with Saida at the center of it. And yeah, also, you know, the whole, why are we being asked to attack some farmers? And she seems displeased with the whole affair. Like, sort of the achievement of your score last time, right, was that both Ranveer and Shah were like, screw this. And I think she is not inclined to go after you either. But at the same time, she's trying to figure out what has happened.
So I am taking up a lot of spotlight, so I'm happy for someone else to say something. But if they don't want to, I can just keep going.
I mean, so like Mushrik wasn't here for all of this, but let's just say that, you know, we can guess what happened. And we just want to cover this up, I suppose, because they wouldn't be all too pleased if they found out. For sure. So, like, Reeks? No. Ah, no, ma'am, that's just old me, Captain Mackerel. And this Mackerel, also named Captain Mackerel.
Yes. Your mackerel is also named Captain Mackerel. She looks at you and she says, you know, I really should pay closer attention to the role lists in these plays.
He's a method actor.
Yes, so I gathered.
Listen, don't worry about it. He's clearly pretending to be someone else. We all know that. Don't worry too much about it. Just let the man do his own life. Important thing is, what is going on with Saida Auntie? Who is trying to poison her? What is all this stuff about demons?
Who's trying to poison her is Mylera Clev, presumably. She just says.
Yeah, I was going to. If she wasn't going to say it, I was going to say it. But now I get to roleplay Bidroy being surprised. So Bidroy is just going to be like, Mylera Clev? Is that Ustad Jai Clev's Is that Ustad Jaisal Khelef's daughter who like ran away to Dustwall and like did the things, and I don't know, there was some stuff I heard, and then she came back. Wasn't she like a criminal or something? You guys are hanging out with her?
You insult her at your own peril, but yes, we are, as you put it, hanging out with her.
Oh, insult her at my own peril. What, is she going to be, is she going to deny being all these things? Is she around? I am perfectly happy to insult her to her face. In fact, please.
Bidjahi, come on, just let it be.
No, no, this
let it be.
This cannot be let be. Clem, sibling Clem, it cannot be let be.
She looks to one side, and she looks at Ranveer, and he just says, like, she was supposed to be in the tent with me, and she's not. And that's...
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's dishonorable to use such a poison. I did not know that the Falling Star Sword School would stoop so low.
It was not a fight. It was not a fight. It was an ambush.
Mumtaz finally comes to, I think, and she says, yes, it was an ambush and a kidnapping. And I think there's a dead man in there. And as she says that, you hear the buzzing of bees. They have been slow to get here. But, well, not that slow, actually, because all of this has unfolded in a matter of minutes. So, yeah.
I think the issue is more like the bees were there, but the player was happening all this time, and we weren't paying attention.
Yeah, probably, yeah. So you hear the bees, and...
A dead man.
Yeah, and I suppose the Rakshas are on their way too, following the bees, as they do. So we see Rakshasa. We haven't seen the Rakshas of Ashcloister before, actually. You're in like the entertainment district. So yeah, I think you see a little Rakshasa man who wears like very, very fine clothing for Rakshasa, but almost like ragtag combinations of it.
Should we remind the audience what the Rakshasa is? Because I don't think they've shown up this season.
Yeah. Fair enough. They are the collectors of the dead. When someone dies in Uduasha, their soul goes into the flame. There are no ghosts in Uduasha. And the body is taken care of by the Death Seeker bees, which are bees that turn them into corpse wax. Eventually. The Rakshas are the caretakers of the bees. They are the undertakers, the keepers of the dead.
The bees eat all the flesh and all the soft bits, and then the bones and all the random stuff that the dead person would have had on them. The Rakshas have carted them away.
Yeah. And a little man wearing many scraps of cloth is slowly making his way over here. He's not particularly stopping by to talk with you or anything. He's going to do his job. But the evidence of someone having died becomes apparent in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And Mumtaz says, I don't precisely know what happened, but someone put a bag over my head. Someone put a bag over Saida's head. And then there was an awful lot of shouting.
Okay, Mumtaz, please, thank you. You don't have to worry about it anymore. Captain Mackerel is here. He will look after you. And Clem, please look after Ustad Saida. Ustad Ankia, it seems that if there's someone who's dead, it may be one of your people. And I don't know who killed them. Maybe it was Ustad Saida. In any case, there may be... Let us go see. Let us go see what the debts are to be paid and who must pay. And I think, like, as the representative of the school in Saida's... In convalescence, I guess... I would like to talk. I'm going to take Ankia with me to the tent, and we're going to try to figure out if, like, this person who was killed, are they a member of the Falling Star School, and did Saida kill them? And like, because now honor and blood must be spilled in some way.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So she will head away with you to do that, and I think to keep the spotlight on Mushfik and Clem for a bit, the Ranveer turns towards Clem and says, well, I don't know precisely what happened there, but you are friends with him? He says, and he nods after the disappearing Bidruhi.
Yeah, of a sort, yeah. He's a good man. He's a very good man.
Near as I can tell, my Ustad hasn't ordered me to kill you, even though an Ustad has. But it's probably for the best we're not seen together for all too long. I'm sorry about all this, though.
Thank you.
I think Mushvik's going to be less impressed by an apology. He goes, this is your opera. One of ours is ambushed and poisoned, and then you accuse us of converting with demons? This is a great and heroic falling star, is it?
No, she wasn't accusing you. Not at all. I'm a simple man, I follow my passions, but this doesn't just smell of the ghost field. This smells of politics. I think you've been caught up in something. And I think we have been played for fools. And I think with that, he's actually just going to turn around because he said his piece, right? Like, yeah. I'm not going to kill you. We have to figure out what the fuck. but we should probably not necessarily be seen together. Still, I think it's clear to you both that he is also like not on board with the killing some peasants for political reasons plan. Yeah. So, you know.
What are you going to do about it? Jyclev's the one who's got the problem. He's clearly fucking with some powerful shit. What are you going to do about it if you're not on board with it?
Yeah, okay, you can make a roll here. He is trying to leave, but if you want to like push him further, I think it's an action at this point, actually.
Yeah, I think I am going to push him further. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, let's call it risky standard.
Yeah, I'm going to... I feel like this is intimidating or threatening.
Yep.
With force and personality, I'm going to command. Yep. Like, provoking a response.
Yep.
Cool. Risky standard. What would a devil's bargain here be?
So, what's a good devil's bargain?
Remind me what you're doing again?
Convincing Ranveer to, like, give you something more than just be like, I'm not going to kill you. That's basically if I understand you correctly.
Yeah, basically something about it.
I have a devil's bargain, actually. Mm-hmm. And it's invoking that you know Tamira. Like, invoking that she's also in the VIP tent. We are not just, you know, some random peasants. We matter. I think that's very distasteful to Clem, but it would make sense, right? To be like, I know your buddy in the tent over there.
Yeah, I'm feeling it's kind of like the company you keep up there. It's not exactly befitting the sort of honor that you're trying to give out to Mira.
That, yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's a drug dealer, essentially. Yeah. Uh-huh.
I think it's enough. You sort of tip your hand that you know her. Yeah. Take the devil's bargain, and it will get back to her that you have used her name again.
Well, at least she can be helpful one more time.
If she doesn't want her name used, she should just change her name.
Yes.
That's all I'm saying.
Oh, she has. She has, believe me. But
do it again.
Anyway.
Do it again for the second time. Let's see. Oh, fuck me. That's 2 and a 3.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Assaulty classic. Well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What he does is, he, like, you still have a point that he, like, owes you one, but he can't do anything. What the outcome of your failure here will be is that he says nothing further to you, but he turns over his shoulder and he throws you something. And he just gives you a look as if, like, you know, you want help? All right, here. And he throws you a thing, and you presumably catch it. And it is a small... golden coin. At first you just think it's money, right? Like, as if he's throwing you change, almost an insult. But then you turn it over, and on the reverse side of it is stamped a peacock. A peacock and a hyena. And it is a token of House Anrakis. And what he's saying is, if you want to talk politics, talk to them. And so the consequence you get here, actually, is a lost opportunity in that the Falling Star will speak no further of this matter. They have kicked it upstairs. And the risky consequence here simply is like, you can either abandon this opportunity or you can go talk to the nobility and see how they handle it. You have a token here that gets you their attention. So basically how I'm framing this is actually you can try again, but from a desperate position. That's... And it's with them.
Do it. Do... No, don't...
Fuck it, mean... yeah.
Mm. Out of character, do it. In character? Yes.
Yeah. Note that House Anrakis are not here. They are the... they sponsored this whole event, but they're not attending it themselves. This is like a play for the masses. They have cooler entertainment of their own.
I made House Anrakis, and I want the viewers to listeners to see the cool house I made.
Yeah, yeah, their symbol is a peacock and a hyena. Among others, they have many symbols, but this is what's imprinted on this particular coin. So yeah, you have been kicked upstairs, Clem. I still think it's like he's still doing you a favor, kinda, but not the favor you wanted.
Some people won't be deterred from their position, I suppose.
I guess what we have heard of Ranveer is that he does not touch politics. He really does not.
Tucks it into a fold in their clothing.
Very good. Is there more to the scene, or are you taking Saida to...
Yeah, I was going to say, like... I mean, I guess mechanically there's, like, we know that she's not going to die on us, but we should,
Yep.
Only so still my do question... something in character.
Yes. My question here is, you know a medic, but she is at the House of the Hungry, and she's not a favorite contact. So you could take her to the charity hospital at the House of the Hungry for Pulumi. Is that what you do, or do you take her to some other contact or friend, or do you simply take her home? Like, what's your... What is your approach here to getting Saida healed?
Well, let's see.
Or... as an alternative, Clem has a good friend who is a medic who we have not seen.
Oh,
Oh yeah. Prince, did you mention what we did on Friday?
Oh, no, I have not. So we have, to flesh out Clem's backstory, as Clem is joining in the middle of the season, we have played a game of Microscope to detail Clem's backstory. And in that, we established a little more detail about her rival, her best friend, and some of her contacts. Is there anything else I should be saying about it? Yes, it's out as an extra by the time you listen to this.
Should be.
I see that Clem has Battlefield Medic as a contact, so that seems...
Yeah.
He's our boy.
Yeah, that's the only character.
Yeah. I think Clem looks at... She's like, I know somebody who can help us.
All right, let's go.
Knows this sort of poison before. He was a good guy.
Oh, just lead the way. And, I think Saida being a... I'm sure he's just going to sling Saida over his shoulder as well. And...
What about
Mumtaz? Clem's like, no. You take Mumtaz, I'll carry Saida. Like princess carry, rather than a fireman's over the shoulder carry. She's an old lady. She's a lady. Don't do that.
Yeah. Mumtaz, I think, for her part, says, like, I'm fine, but I should probably talk to... She looks down at the stage, and she sighs. I should probably talk to Don John.
John?
And nobody of you actually know who Don John is. Saida does, but... but she goes, like, I'll check in with Bidruhi later. Thanks. And out of character, to clarify, Don John is the enigmatic leader of the Blue Smoke Troop, their manager, who is almost never seen.
Okay, I'm not in the scene, but I have told Mushfik Bhai to look after my girlfriend, who's clearly going through some things, you know?
Yeah. You can come with her if you want, but she is heading down towards the backstage again.
Alright, I think maybe Clem and Mushfik can split off then, like, so let's have Clem takes Aida to the medic, and Mushvik, I think, is also like curious as well. Like, oh, she's got to report something to Don John. So, yeah, I think I'll just go. Oh, okay, sure. I'll take you there.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. Why not? So we have three individual scenes. Okay, I do want to give them proper focus, but I think chronologically it just makes sense to do Bidrohi first because he's just going around the corner.
Yeah. So I don't know how long it'll be. We'll see.
Yeah. So you and the Ustad, Ankia, go around the corner alongside, I guess Ranveer fucked off. So it's actually just you and her, but she is not the sort of person to bother with bodyguards. So... I guess it's you and her and the Rakshata. And so you step into this dim, dark corridor where this battle ensued. And there's no corpse smell yet, right? But there is the rather freaky sight of a dead man covered in bees crawling frantically all over the body and the clothes.
Yeah, we're used to this in the hospitality ghetto, unfortunately.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and the little Rakshasa stands to one side and looks over it and says, "Eh, best not disturb the bees right now. You know him? You know who he was?" And he looks up and, well, I guess you can see the clothes of the person, who are a lot less elegant than the Falling Star normally does. This is like clearly someone who was trying to be incognito. In like very ordinary clothes, with like a hood over his head and thick gloves, which you can make out. And I think, you know, Anke is many things, but she's not a detective. So she looks down and she like slowly shakes her head and says, "Can we approach? I want to see if he has a ring." "Eh, I'll check for you," the Rakshasa says, and he approaches. And the Rakshasa are one of the few people who can touch the bees. It's considered... A, it's considered very bad luck, and B, they sting. But he pulls off a glove, and then he pulls off the other glove, and then he looks up and he shakes his head. And she says, "They're not one of mine, at least not someone who's graduated."
Okay. Well, it wasn't one of ours. All the people are... Well, there's not a lot of us out there. So, there's someone here who's dead, and we don't know. Unless I look at the Rakshasa, because I've heard stories about them.
Yeah.
I say, "Sir, is it true that you can talk to them?" And I gesture at the bees.
"Yeah, I can ask him a couple of questions, sure."
"Can they describe him?
He leans down, he goes, "You ask a lot, but all right. And he heads over, he like squats down, he takes up a bee on his fingers, and he looks at it. And then he almost, like, shies backwards, like, half in surprise, half in shock. He goes, "Oh, he ain't from Uduasha."
"Oh, okay."
"Yeah, got ghosts all over him. Ghosts and the sea and Duskfall. Yeah, he's from Duskfall."
Okay.
And I think, given what we know, what you know about Malera Kev.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I figured that. I do turn to Ustad Ankia with the sort of like look of resolve and triumph on my face, I guess. And I say, "I have no questions for Sir and the bees, do you, Ustad?"
"No, I think we both understand the situation here."
"Okay. Shall we step outside and discuss?"
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she withdraws as the guy goes. And the guy goes, Oi, it's customary to throw a Rakshasa coin, you know, when he does you a favor."
"Sir, I'm so sorry, I forgot. Here, And you know what? I'm going to roll lifestyle. I'm going to throw him some extra. I'm going to see how much I can throw him.
Yep, absolutely.
That's a 3. I'm poor.
Yes. Okay. You have an option here. I think you can either spend an actual coin or 2 stash, or this guy is going to be pissed off because I think if you roll a 3, what you have in spare change is just going to be an insult.
Shit. Okay. I'm going to throw some stash. What does that look like? I have a nice earring, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Mom does give it to me.
Yeah.
What is gained is yeeted away.
Yes. You throw it to him, he snatches it, and he goes, oh, great. This'll go great with my clothes, thanks. And,
sir, I have chosen it just for you, for that very purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yes. This guy is probably not going to be relevant, but I have named him in my head. His name is Dobby. He is a Rakshasa and a washerman.
Anyway.
Back out, and I guess, you step back out into the fresh air.
And I'm calming down, like that burst of fury and adrenaline is gone. Mm-hmm. So now I'm like really conscious that I'm like right next to Ustad Ankia the Veiled, you know, all the things that I said about her last session, and you know, she's my crush / idol, and she's like super cool in real life, obviously, and all that. But I'm still holding firm. And I'm going to look her in the eye, which are, of course, the only visible part of her body right now, but they are incredible eyes. And you know, even though my heart's thumping, I'm going to say, my heart's thumping with fear and anger and also, you know, just like excitement and all that. But I'm still going to say, Ustad, so as I understand the situation, Mylera Clev, who is of the Falling Star School, but not an Ustad, has done me a grave injury by attempting to kidnap my girlfriend, who is not involved at all in any of this, and she has poisoned my Ustad. And thus, as an Ustad of the Falling Star School, I ask you to convey to her my formal challenge. And I'm going to demand satisfaction.
Yeah. Okay, you have a move for this even. Yeah. How does it work again?
So I can issue a challenge to a single opponent to compel them to fight me for a few moments. So that's how it normally does.
Yeah. Okay, so the move is not really applicable, but you are telling her to.
Yeah.
To issue the challenge. And she crosses her arms and she says, I will convey it. And she's utterly unamused by all of this.
I'm happy to use the move if it means that Mylera Clev will show up and there's no way that she wiggles out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's what I was meaning. Move, yeah.
Sure.
So normally it's meant to be like, you know, during a fight, you just make someone fight you. But to enable a score, I think I'm going to take 3 stress just roll. Is that okay?
Yep.
Okay, cool.
Absolutely. So, okay, Mylera Clev will show up and will face you.
Cool.
It's,
so I have that to look forward to.
And this may worsen the war in some ways, even though you've gotten a third of the school off your backs.
Yeah.
It will
really, how shall we say, purify the core essence of what the war is really about.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. So, done with that scene, I suppose?
Yeah, I think so.
It makes its way away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Bidruhi, and as he turns away, I think he turns around and says, big fan. And then leaves.
Yep. And if she hears you, she does not acknowledge you. Very good.
Yeah. Like all, I mean, you know, stars, they shouldn't.
Uh-huh. Meanwhile, Clem, where do you think Aaron lives these days? What's his type of accommodation?
Oh, that's a question. I was dreading that.
I have an idea of what he's like, so I'm going to spring that on you, but...
Oh, no. You mean to say he's not a sweet little nerdy guy after all the horrible things that went down during the war?
I mean, in your backstory, he was a sweet little nerdy guy like 15 years ago. So
was he sweet?
How long was that?
Was he sweet? Really? He was a nerdy guy.
He was a nerdy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was. I suppose he was nice, right? I kind of like the idea of him being in Galampith, just because I think that's just a really cool aesthetic to have, like a medic working in that sort of area.
In the industrial area with the steam and the waxwork and everything. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, very cool. Maybe I think he's picked up tricks from all over. He has, after all, traveled the world widely now. We don't even know why he's in Uduasha. We never established that, so I guess we'll find that out. And how many times do you think you've seen Eren before this, since you've been in Uduasha? I guess we'll establish that in the scene, actually, because we'll see what the vibe is like. Unless you have some opinion on it now.
No, nothing yet, I think. Nothing. Okay. Nothing.
We know that you've been reunited with him, and you know where he lives. And so, yeah, he has a workshop in Galampith. And because he has a workshop in Galampith, I think he is working closely with, like, the waxwork golems and with, like, esoteric meetings of medicine and what is almost necromancy. Like, doing stuff with the wax produced by the bodies, or produced by the bees from the bodies. And so you step into this like smoky, low workshop. It's very hot. There's steam passing by overhead. There's like clanging in the background. There's like a couple of assistants moving about, because he is, you know, kind of a master of his craft at this point. He has people he teaches. One of them lets you in, and then we see Eren, who is still a thin, weedy guy with one leg made of spark craft and metal, and one hand made of wax. And back in the war, he lost a leg and a hand, and suffered, in addition, some burn scars all over. He has been through some shit. He still wears the thick glasses, though he has added like a bunch of extra lenses that fold down over them. So, yeah, a different man. And he looks up from his work. He is reading, like studying some sort of manual. And he says, Clementine.
Eren, I need your help, please.
Yes. No, you don't. No, there's nothing wrong with you. No, technically, I think what you mean is to say is that person you're carrying needs my help,
This guy didn't change.
I thought sweet and nerdy.
And he was like this when he... before too.
He's very pedantic, okay? Anyway, he stands up, his like mechanical leg hisses. It's not exactly the right size for him, so he leans slightly as he walks. And he comes forward and says, Who exactly is this? What sort of company have you fallen in with now? Musharrafists? No?
Not this time.
Vanguard?
No, not this time. The Ketasi down the hospitality ghetto. I think this might be the one, Eren. I think this might be the one. That's why it's me asking you for the help. Or them.
You think this might be the one? Really? Now, finally. I've heard this sort of language before. You fall in with these people, you get in an awful lot of trouble. Fine, lay her down. Do you know what's wrong with her? Do you know what happened? Do you have a diagnosis? Do you have any information at all?
Yep, stabbed. Couple times. Poison. The usual.
Yes, that's very exact and precise. I'm glad you know which of the organs can get stabbed, he says, and he looks at his anatomical charts.
You also know which poison it is, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the usual poison, the one that I don't like to talk about, Aaron.
Ah.
Don't. I'd rather not.
Yes.
Mention.
Words. Words have power, don't they? That's what people say. Superstitious idiots. I have the book on it here somewhere. He pulls out some slightly soggy books from all the steam and the humidity that rises in this part of Udvasha, and looks very annoyed with it.
He is also an aficionado of the Playful Turtle.
I think he's not an aficionado of it. He just happens to live nearby it, and it annoys him to no fucking end. But anyway, he pulls out the book, he moves over to Saida, and he says, well, whoever this Kethrisi person is, it will require some time in recovery. Not just the antidote, but we need to make sure the wound heals smoothly and no loss of motor functions. And this might be the one, really. Out of curiosity, who did the stabbing?
One of the Falling Star lot. They like to play at that on a ship, right? I know.
Well, okay. I assume they don't know you came to me about this matter, and if they do, I assume they don't take offense to it. But maybe I shouldn't be assuming things. It's cost me some limbs before.
Oh, you've got a couple more to lose. Right?
What a cute dynamic.
Yes. He nods, and he says, you are technically correct. And then he will lean down over Saina.
The best kind of correct, yes. Hey, Aaron.
I think there's a little smile playing across his lips, and he looks up at you and he says, yes. You know, you haven't changed at all.
I think some would say differently. Yeah.
I think that might be the scene. I think it's...
Moshrik Bhai, please take notes. This is how you should talk to Clem. Okay?
Yeah. I like how Aaron has turned out. I hope you feel happy with his development too.
He's such a sweet little nerdy boy.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he still is somehow.
Yes.
So yeah, Aaron is going to be tending to Saida, and this is interesting because this means when we get Saida back in play, I think she will have to have a scene with Aaron as well.
Nice.
I
can't wait.
I was just thinking Saida with this guy. Great.
Oh, I'm not sure if this guy's going to survive meeting with Saida.
Yes.
Oh no, they're exactly the same kind of person, but in different. But like,
no, that's all I mean. Different things. There's too much.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah. So, cutting to Mushfik backstage, and like backstage is still kind of an improvised, ramshackle area. Mm. It's like quite ragtag.
That's fine. He knows his way around. He's a backdoor man.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you've been in here before, and Mumtaz, you probably see being carried nearby is Cherubino, who has a big bruise on his face from how you hit him very hard with a mackerel, yes. And threw him off stage. And he goes up and taps the shoulder of one of the people in the Greek chorus. Right. One of the people that Clem was just joining, standing next to. Just before. And this person turns around wearing an elaborate mask. We never established what the hell this opera was about, but it's something to do with fish. Fishermen. So I think this guy turns around and he's wearing an elaborate shrimp mask.
I remembered the story. Would you like me to tell you what the opera was about?
Okay, yes, please do.
It was about a wise but impish emperor or king or something who went to find a man in the desert who claimed to be a wise fisherman, but he's in the middle of the desert, so he just keeps like imagining fish. So to snap him out of it, the wise emperor starts slapping him with fish.
Right. Yes. Right. Okay. So I guess it's not actually it can still be a shrimp. The chorus is from the fisherman's imagination.
Yeah. You can guess shrimp.
So this like very strange crustacean mask turns around and Mumtaz says, well, Sorry, I brought a friend. It's, listen, I just wanted to talk to you. Saida, you know Saida, you've met Saida. She said a name. I think I've seen one of the things from the book. And this guy nods slowly. He casts an eye over towards Mushfik. And then he says quite slowly and solemnly, like looking at Mushfik, still done up as Captain Mackerel, "You know, I preferred you in the role as the tiger."
What can Mushfik say? I think Mushfik says, "Oh, I thought this play was a stirring success."
Aside from the little interruption, we can only hope our patrons pay us. Mumtaz just goes like, I need to double check something. Do you have it here?" And he like waves at her and takes her to like, and I think they've just packed this like occult dangerous book with like their other scene performance, right? They have all their librettos and stuff.
Right.
It's just in with them. And so this is the first time you've seen this, the book bound in blue leather since you acquired it for the troop, right? And they have not actually let you near it before, so it's very funny that Mushfik, the least interested person probably, is the one who gets to see it again. And Mumtaz does not particularly care. She is like occupied with this. So she's going to open the book and like check some passage in it, and
but as it happens, I say Mushfik is interested because of all this shit that Saida's been saying. So I'm not going to ask for the book directly. So she's Mutas is leaping through it. Can I get a glimpse of what she's looking at? Maybe like
I think you can totally look over her shoulder. I think it's well set up for that. And what she is doing is, this is a book that consults the actual occult secrets they were trying to fake in right, the opera you did a score about. And I think you can get a glimpse, but maybe there should be some sort of role to make sense of it. But what it does seem to be is a compilation of like stories. So not the full-length operas or whatever, but a compilation of stories that have, and this is the trippy part, have or will be turned into operas.
Right.
It's an occult book, so it doesn't necessarily have to make sense.
You just gotta, I mean, it's so easy to write a story that can be that will be turned into an opera. Just do it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So you can make some sort of role here if you want to glean some deeper insight from it. But if you want to just like figure out what it is, then yeah, it's like a compilation of tales from Uduasha, some of which are true, some of which are not, some of which will become true.
Yeah, well, that interests me because I'm trying to figure out, well, what the hell's going on. Well, and
mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's logical with some sort of role, probably like study or
this
attune,
to try to make sense
of this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it's a controlled position, because while it is like a dangerous occult book, you are not delving into it too deeply, and you have people here who have already deciphered it.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think it's limited effect, because you're just peeking in it now that I think about it. So it's controlled limited. You can make it risky standard, I think, if you like more overtly like go up next to Mumtaz and like try to help her read it or something. What she's doing, obviously, she's looking for references to the Prince of Endings and this whole they threw Prince Katam into the wilderness. That's what she's trying to.
Mm-hmm. I think it's very much in character for Mushfik to just, you know, sit up like next to her and also go, that's quite very interesting.
Yeah. Okay, so. Yes. You can make a roll at risky standard then as you try to research this alongside her.
All right. Can I get an assist or some kind of from someone? Maybe Saida, even though she's almost dead. Uh-huh.
So you can't get an assist from Saida because her player is not here to consent to it, but I can do a devil's bargain tied to Saida, I suppose.
Sure.
Saida's
the only one who's ever mentioned any of this stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely. okay, I have a devil's bargain for you. And it's like, as this book is being paged through, there will also be a section involving your, as yet, I think, unnamed Ustad, the person you're looking for.
Okay.
Apparently they are featured in a story or something.
Are there the demand you actually follow up on this Ustad?
Well, I don't know. There's a lot of stuff going on. I'm also trying to follow up on
all. We have not named your missing Ustad yet, have we?
Oh, no. We could.
No. Yeah, okay. Here's your devil's bargain. Name your Ustad.
Do it
That's
now.
My devil's bargain?
What?
That's my devil's bargain?
Yes.
Well, also that this will be tied to...
The devil's bargain is that you have to give him a real name that isn't, like, fish-themed.
No, I'm going to say his name is... Shahid.
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 Oh, yeah. Shahid, yeah.
Yes. So Ustad Shahid passes by in this book, and you can take a bonus dice from this, but I will tell you it has consequences beyond, because you learn something about him in this moment. But make the roll first, and we'll see how that goes.
Probably poorly.
So it's risky standard. A one and a one.
I don't want to know.
Lovely. Okay. So, what happens here is that you, like, try to read through this book, and you cannot make head or tails of anything about the Prince of Endings, or Prince Khatam, or any of the other names. And I think the simple consequence here is that Mumtaz cannot either. So the risk you are exposing them both to is that she is going to continue to be troubled by, like, dreams and nightmares and visions she can't understand, and the book does not actually help her. So unless you want to resist it, she is going to continue to have weird dreams and hallucinations and reverie and stuff, and, like, her spiritual affliction becomes worse.
Well, I mean, Vidra, he told his dear old friend, Sherekhadav, to look after Mumtaz, so I can't let that happen.
Yeah, but this is also kind of an out-of-character decision, right? You could just go, like, actually, Mushfiq is not capable of helping her with this.
Mushfiq is capable of helping her by, you know, going, oh no, don't give up, keep at it, okay, even after I'm gone.
Okay.
You'll get it eventually.
Fair enough. You could resist it, then. I think it's either insight or resolve. And I think the reason you cannot stay and continue reading it furthermore makes sense, then, since this action failed and you took this devil's bargain, is that you read the short story that describes Ustad Shahed's death. So yes, you will read the story of Ustad Shahed's death in Udwasha, and you will, I suppose, realize, as these things are written, that he is going, in fact, to be killed by Gurban the Camel, the very people smuggler who got him into the city.
Now that's what I call bloody good drama.
All right, well, let's resist. I'm going to resist with resolve because, you know, I'm getting... I'm providing emotional support to what does.
Yes.
Okay, there we go. No, see, no stress at all. That's
a six. No stress at all. You're providing her with emotional assistance. Okay, I am starting a clock that is called simply Ustad Shahid Dies.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
It turns out Mumtaz is really comforted by the smell of fish because she grew up on the coast. Her father was a fisherman.
Mm-hmm. That's easy. This is what the play is actually about, you know?
So, I have started the clock but not yet ticked it, but we now know that he is living on borrowed time.
Well,
and I don't know if you can avert this, right? Maybe maybe the stuff in this book is destiny, but maybe not.
We'll see. Well, you wanted me to carry on with this and have a lot of motivation.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's very simple. Sherekhatam, it's very simple. We find the person he is borrowing his time from and tell them, can you, like, I don't know, ask for it back later?
Yeah.
Can we extend? Yeah, we're going to refinance this loan. Can we mortgage something for this?
Yes.
Can we trade in?
Yep.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's a campaign.
Yes.
Okay. Cool.
Okay, what? Yes.
Now what?
I think that's the scene. So I think we have done all of the conclusions.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's done.
So we do know that Mumtaz will be eventually able to piece things together, even if Mushfiq has gotten no further information here.
Hmm.
I don't know what piecing things together mean, by the way, because again, all of this is weird shit made up by Saida and Tree, but we will get to it.
Yeah. See?
But we can define it now.
Yeah.
Well, they're not here. Aha.
Exactly. This is exactly what Tree deserves. I believe this.
We're going to define all your enigmatic bullshit.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, I would have done it if Mushfik had succeeded, but Mushfik did not succeed, so here we are.
Lol.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so downtime for downtime.
Yes, time. I think we're in downtime. And okay, I suppose we have defined that there will be some sort of clash with Malera Clev, but we can focus on downtime or we can breeze through downtime and focus on Malera Clev as... Mm-hmm. As you prefer.
I think we can do okay amounts of downtime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then do something.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Adia, have you thought about what you're going to do for your playbook advance? Because we briefly discussed that after session last time, didn't we?
Yeah.
About that trauma thing.
Hmm. Well, I didn't have somewhat of an idea, so Zeb also mentioned that Mushrik was being quite unkind to be through him, and maybe we should do something about that.
I felt and I agree. Bad.
And I agree. So, my idea is, I think, you know, if Mushfik's being like this, it's because of his, you know, his past traumas with, you know, losing all his friends and everything, and he's just being kind of like, he's kind of pushing Bidrohi away. So, maybe one way to both deal with the Bidrohi situation and Mushfik's many traumas and is for him to, you know, to talk about some of these feelings and open up. So maybe, so what for downtime, Mushfik's gonna go see a therapist.
Okay.
In Uduasha? What's that like?
or someone close enough to a therapist.
Yes.
Which could, some sort in of... this case could be...
You know who the best therapist of all time is?
Mm-hmm.
The Rakshasa called Daddy Dunda.
Oh yeah.
Yes. You also have Aziz, a bartender. Who I is so funny.
Oh my god! Yes.
Bar therapy.
Make it happen.
So, but before that, so Prince, currently Mushrik has three traumas.
Yes.
One more would be bad.
Mm-hmm.
So, I would like to either, maybe like through this downtime action, maybe I can either gain an extra stress box or an extra trauma box or something.
Okay, working on healing a trauma or expanding your trauma capacity. Yeah,
if you like.
I dig it. Okay, right. So I have two variants here for this. One is a straightforward 12 clock, and you can work on this and get an opportunity to do it via like therapy and forging a way forward. And the other one is an 8 clock, but it will not actually finish until you have settled things with your Ustad, because I think that makes sense. You're trying to work out like trauma from your past. So we can make it a 12 clock, or we can make it an 8 clock that gives you a chance to like confront your past at the end of it.
Yeah. All right, I think I'm going to go with the former, because the way I'm thinking about it is that it's not necessarily anything to do with Ustad. It's more like Mushfik learning to like make friends and rely on them again, like without being afraid of dying on him.
That's exactly how I wanted to frame it. Like eight if it's revisiting your past, but 12 if it's towards your future, which I think is harder, but also like, you know, frees you up more.
I think that's better.
If I may suggest, from the mechanical perspective, since you have that advance now, you could just take an ability that gives you an extra trauma box and something else. Like kind of like reskinning the survivor ability. You could do that and then also work on a long-term project to also get rid of a trauma. So you'd have like the ability to take 5 trauma, but you'd have 2 trauma instead of 3. Once you're done.
I don't think I need all that extra room. Or maybe
it's only 10 sessions. It's only been 10 sessions.
Yeah. All right. Fine.
There's so much more to see of Mushfik.
Yeah. So many sides.
Yeah. Okay. I'll I'll use up my playbook advance to get that, and...
Mm-hmm. So Survivor gives you an extra stress box, not an extra trauma box, though.
Yeah, that's fine. So if you reskin it to be an extra trauma box.
Okay.
I can have an extra stress box as well. I mean, you know, gives me more...
Sure.
Okay, so an extra stress box and working on healing trauma.
Yeah.
Okay, sure. That makes sense, too.
Very good. Okay.
Do you want to take Survivor as it is?
I think it just makes sense for Mushvik to be like able to survive in the Deathlands. But...
That makes sense for him. Yep.
Yeah, I'll just say that then.
Cool.
And this does mean that we might be able to see some adventures in the desert down the line, because now Mushvik has the mechanical ability to survive in the desert. So
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, very good. It's done.
Okay. Right. So a 12 project to deal with your traumas. And dealing with trauma is never easy in this game. So it will not just be like finish the project and it's done. There will be some like pre-play scenes also. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what I had in mind, like pre-play, you know, maybe, you know, get to know Bidrihu more.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So are you starting your project by talking to Bidrihu, or are you talking your project by starting your project by seeking therapy?
okay. Given what Mushvik's just learned, I think the best place to start actually is one of his old friends, which is Zahir.
Zahir, ah. Yes,
because we can talk about the fact that, you know, Usad Shah is about to die, and, you know, Zahir should probably know as well.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Let's make it at least a short scene. Yeah. So. You meet with Zahir. I guess you meet in the restaurant. That's your usual hangout, right? It makes sense he would be there.
You meet at Aziz's bar as well. Yeah,
okay. At Aziz's bar. Lovely. So, Zahir is there. Mm-hmm. He is... Okay, for some reason, I have him throwing darts in my mind, so I'm going to go with that. He's playing darts.
Nice.
I forget what his tags were. I think I said he was refined and something about he had a soft spot for animals.
Headstrong, refined, loves animals.
Headstrong, refined, loves animals. Okay, and I guess plays darts.
Plays darts.
He throws one at the board, sees you come in, and he goes, "Ah, Mushvik, you want to play, or do you have somewhere to be? Deadlines to keep." And he's still angry about last time where you accused him of being late.
And Mushvik says, "Oh, deadline's the right word, all right. Sit down."
But he like pauses and sees that you're serious and kind of throws the last dart blindly, misses the board, just sticks it in the wall, leaves it there for now. And then he sits down and goes, "No jokes? No."
"No jokes. Or, I mean, I don't know, at least I don't think so. I don't know how to explain this." "Yeah, something's up. I mean, I don't know how to explain this, but lately I've been getting this feeling, right? Like something, like the war, right? What do you know about the war? What were we told about the war, right? Like, we're just protecting our farmlands, right? Like, all to do with the radiant energy, all that, yeah?"
Yeah, he says, and he does not like to think about the war, I think. Like, it's...
No.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, Saida, who has run the crew, she's been, she'd been saying some stuff. Something about a prince from Kethris, and how the great powers of the city have been... have betrayed him.
Yeah, I know something vaguely about that. I figured that was about your whole petition to establish a house or something, right? You did some paperwork.
No, this is like in the past, or maybe or in the future. Like it doesn't make any sense at all to me, right? But I've just got this feeling like if this happened in the past, right? What do some noble houses of like Uduasha have to do with Kethris? Like, Which, I mean, out of character, how far away is Ketra's, do you think, canonically?
Yeah, far. Like, far, days far away. Day. So.
Yeah, like, you know, we should be, like, you know, we shouldn't even cross their mind, but, like, they've been conspiring against us, throwing some prince into the wilderness, something, and, like, what do they have to do with us? And I just get this feeling, the war was about this somehow. And I don't know why I feel this way, but somehow I just know.
You know, I know what you mean, kind of. I thought it was just about us, but I get the feeling, too, here in Udvasha, there's a lot going on. The Empire, Ketris, people are talking about Sunfall for some reason, although all they say is, don't go there. I don't know.
Yeah, I've heard. Yeah. And today, going through this book, right? This book that Saida really wanted to get her hands on. And, like, said, like, what's the Shahid? He's going to die here. His name was in that book, and it said that he was going to die.
Have you told him that he's even in Udvasha? Because you learned that pretty recently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I mean, right now, this is the important part. Let's be diegetic.
Yeah, exactly. So he goes like, wait, he's here?
A lot has gone down, right?
All right. Okay. Well, I don't know about this book. Could be... I don't know that I believe in prophecy, but I definitely believe in people writing kill lists. Do you know where he is?
Maybe. So, guess who else I ran into? Just a few days ago.
You have that look about you, Omid?
Who else, right? He was looking for me as well. Not necessarily to kill me, he says, but to tell me to get out of town, because... things are in motion. Things beyond our understanding.
Well, I know that kind of talk. That's what they say when they want to split us up and keep us from working together, isn't it?
Well, still here. But he did give me a useful piece of information. Ustad Shahid is here, and I know the name of the guy who smuggled him in.
Brave man. I'd like to shake his hand.
Oh. I think we'll be shaking more out of him than that.
All right, he says. Are we in a hurry?
I think it's also a good opportunity for them to kind of maybe, like, we don't have to, like, act out the whole scene because, you know.
I was thinking we would transition to you working on this project and swapping stories here.
Yeah, I'm thinking that, like, you know, as Mushrik and, like, you know, Zahir are, like, talking about, like, because it feels like they're going to war again on the same side, right? And, like, maybe that somehow ties into, like, Mushvik's, working on his traumas.
Yeah, I dig it. Yeah. So, what sort of action do you think it is here?
Oh, I mean, it has to be concerted, right?
Yeah, makes sense. And it's with your friend, so take plus one dive. And let's see if talking to your friend makes you feel any better. And makes you work through your traumas.
Well, 302.
One tick only. I think the reason it's one tick is, it's not that it's a bad time with Zahir, but I think very often when working through traumas with another person who has the same traumas, you know, it's often hard to make progress because you end up just kind of, you know, talking things through, but being unable to achieve that shift of mindset. So I think it makes sense. It's like, it's nice to share a story, but Zahir is... no more healed from this than you are.
But I guess this is step one, acknowledging the problem.
Exactly, yeah. So you and Zahir have acknowledged two problems. One, you're too hung up on the past, and also your old friend is about to die.
Yeah.
So, lovely. Do you have a second downtime action in mind?
Well, we can move on to someone else and then maybe come back to this, I guess, I did have a second downtime action in mind, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But I forgot because all of this came up. Which was, one of my other ongoing projects is figuring out Al-Qadir.
And, ah, yes.
Yeah, so Here's a question. Alcander, he's not rich, right? Like, he's supposed to be the man of the people, but he's not nobility. He doesn't.
No, he's not nobility. He's not rich. He like dresses well. He's one of those people,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly, Prince. He dresses well. Where does he get his money to dress so nicely?
Ah, excellent. You can absolutely try to investigate this. Is this like a hunt to follow him around or a survey to survey his finances?
Well,
or?
No, there's only 20 of that because I have an Alcander expert on hand, which is Vidrahi.
Ah, you're going to go chat with Vidrahi about Alcander's money. Lovely. Let's see the scene.
Mm-hmm. Where can I be found under the circumstances? I think I'm at home eating, and I'm really upset about everything that's happened. I don't tell my mom that I'm going to go toe-to-toe to the death with Master Swordswoman. Not that bit. But I think I told her that, you know, Syd is ill and so on. So I'm just morose. Mm-hmm. It's not a good time for me right now.
Right.
But I always have time for Mushfik.
Of course. Okay, to make this all kind of make sense in the timeline, let's also say that while Mushfik and Zahir were talking about, you know, conspiracies and all that, like, Mushfik mentioned that he doesn't, like, you know, Omid also mentioned that not to trust Alcander, and there was something there, so, you know, this is all part of the overall you know, investigation into the war. So, yeah, so what's Vidrahi doing? Just, you know, sadly looking out a window?
Yeah, I think it's just one of those, I'm in my bedroom. In fact, we have never seen my room.
No, it's private.
Yeah. So if you walk in, you'll find a narrow cot, a bunch of like swords on the walls and stuff like that. A box of clothes and lots and lots of like random books with titles like Introduction to Modern Business Economics and things like that. Just like the sort of like random books that no one actually wants and that you just find like lying on the street as someone's like moving out, and they just kind of throw it over there. He picks those up and then he reads through them for like funny phrases.
So that's where it comes from.
Yes.
Sorry, what was the last part?
That's where he gets all his like random bullshit phrases and so on that he throws out.
I see.
And I think his reading a book what would the title be? I think something along the lines of Emotional Positivity and You. And he's just lying in bed reading it.
All right. Well, unlike some people, Mushfik will knock on the door first.
Very important when coming to see Vidrahi. This is true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But right now, the only person he's with is science. Science itself. Science is his mistress today. I was like, please come in.
Yeah. Good. Yeah, Mushfik just picks it out of the door. Yeah, now a good time, Vidrahi. And I think Mushfik is kind of aware that, you know, Vidrahi is a bit sad, a bit, you know, it might not be the best time.
Sherekatam, in a global context, this is a very, very bad time in general for me and for, I think, everyone. However, I will say that in the local context, the fact that you are here means that now is a better time than 5 minutes ago.
Mushfik digests this like, oh, okay. And
I'm very happy to see you.
Ah, okay. Well, that's nice.
Would you sit down? Would you like some tea? Would you like a gulab jamun? I think Bal Murad's here. I can tell him to get out and get his gulab jamun.
No, it's on his business, unfortunately.
Business?
Well, you know, you're I'm just a bit curious about your other favorite person in the world, Mr. Alcander.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were talking about Sister Moss.
How sweet. No, he doesn't say that part, but the other guys.
Or my mom, or Usra, or well, Alcander is up there. Sure, Alcader sir, he's cool. I like him.
Yes, him.
Not that I rank my friends, though if I did, you would be up there. Very close to number one. After Sister Moss. Anyway, what did you want?
Oh, just, you know, he has a tendency to always find us at moments that are opportune for him. Have you ever thought about, like, what he's up to?
I mean, sometimes I think about it. Sometimes I wonder, what is Al-Qadr Sir doing right now? Like, to imagine him speaking at dinner parties that he wasn't invited to. Like, to imagine him trying, kind of like, walking through the streets, finding sad-looking people and giving them pearls of wisdom. And then narrowly escaping, being beaten to death by them. But, Chere Khatam, I feel that you are here talking about Al-Qadr Sir, because I know you don't like him. Chere Khatam, I'm a very good reader of people. So, and I like that you have not brought this up yet, because you didn't want to make me choose between you and him. And I appreciate that very much. Don't think I don't. But if you're asking about him, it's because of a particular reason, isn't it?
It is for a particular reason, yeah. I mean, as you say yourself, he's not wanted anywhere. No one doesn't actually do anything of value, yeah?
That's not and quite yeah. what I said, but okay.
Well, you know, that's okay. I read between the lines. So, it's funny that a man such as him seems to be a man of means. Because I saw him just, the day that Clem arrived, getting into a dispute about, what was it, Shadow Silk? Which, now, I'm no expert on, you know, the latest fashion, but I'm to understand that costs an arm and a leg just for a bolt of that thing.
Can you guys clarify for me out of character, you and Prince, like if I heard about this thing with Tumjurji yet?
No, I don't think you have. Okay. I've been meaning for it to happen, but it hasn't happened yet, and I think it's cool if you hear it from Mushfik first. It's very funny.
Al-Qadr Sir is trying to get his hands on Shadow Silk. I mean, that totally checks out for me, Shere Khatam. I mean, it's exactly the kind of thing he would try to do. And then he would fail. Then I'd get into a lot of trouble. Then I'd have to go and bail him out. But that's fine, because I'd get my hands on some Shadow Silk while I'm bailing him out, and so on. We'd have a nice adventure. But, like, just because the man wants Shadow Silk doesn't mean he has the means to acquire Shadow Silk, Shere Khatam.
Well, Shadow Silk is just one of the many things that he doesn't seem to have the means to acquire, but has.
Like a Nobel title.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, who pays for his vests?
His vests. Chere Khatam, let me tell you something about Al-Qadr Sir. And I'm going to roll fortune to see how good my answer actually is. Maybe I'm using the bullshit. I'm going to say something, and we'll see if it's true or not.
Okay, so you make this roll. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, if it's a 6, then it's true. If it's not, then it's half true or whatever.
Okay. Either way, you are working on this clock, I guess. So you're taking, you're doing, well, Bidruhi is doing Mushfik's downtime action for him, kind of. We'll frame it that way.
Does that make sense for you, Adit?
Well, yeah, I mean, because I'm using you as my source of information, so let's see how good your information is.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So it's a clock that you started, right?
It has one tick so far, it's a 4 clock. Yeah. So if you roll a 6, you will actually solve it and figure out an insight about...
I'm happy to call this one of my downtime actions.
Okay, so then you've taken one downtime action each.
Okay. And I am going to get an extra dice because we have high society.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, Al-Qadr is relatively high society for the context of our people.
Yeah. Sure. Particularly when you're trying to figure out why he is high society. So it's 2 ticks. And you can say what you want. Uh-huh.
Okay. So what I'd say, and then you guys can modify it a bit, Prince, is that... Okay. Here's the thing about Al-Qadr Sir. Al-Qadr Sir, it's not quite true that he isn't wanted, that he goes around, that he contributes nothing. Al-Qadr Sir contributes something very important, which is absolute bullshit. Okay, this is very important, Shere Khatam. I know you're a straight shooter, but absolute bullshit is very important when you, like us, are like down in the dumps and there's nothing going on. People like Al-Qadr Sir, they go around and they talk a big game. And most people can see through it, but sometimes, you know, it makes it work. And he goes around, calls himself a man of the people, right? So if he says man of the people, then we are a people. You get what I mean? And things like that, they sometimes he does people favors and people are grateful. And like, for example, I go to really cool tailor, Tum Dorji. You should come with me sometime, by the way. And he did a favor for Tum Dorji back in the day. He got him his land deed and so on to open up his shop, his trade license. And he did that just through the gift of Gab. Sometimes it works. It really does. And Tum Dorji gives him preferential treatment and gives him a nice discount on vests. You know, so Tum Dorji is good. He's not even that expensive. And Alkadir Sir gets a nice discount. Works out for everyone. And that's what happens when you have a good relationship with people and you talk absolute bullshit, Shere Khatam. It's not that mysterious.
Yeah, I think what I will interfere with here, as Peter, he contributes to this information about, like, yes, he's a bullshitter, is I think this is you're speaking of Alkadir and it's a speak of the devil situation. So I think you will hear from outside, from downstairs.
Brothers!
Yeah, exactly. Brothers! Are you home? He calls out. And I think he's here. I also think this gives Mushfiq opportunity to finish this clock if he wants to.
Okay, Alkadir sir, I am absolutely here. Happy to come see you. And then I look at Mushfiq and I kind of like put my hand on his hand and I say, Shere Khatam, you have impeccable instincts. And even though I'm not super sure where you're going with this one, and maybe you're going somewhere that leads nowhere, if you want to go anywhere with this, then I will always be with you, 100%. Okay? Do you want to ambush? Do you want to kidnap this man and beat him up for answers? I don't think that's a good idea, but if you do it, I will do it.
Out of character, in character, I don't. I actually didn't have another plan for what to ask Alakadir at this moment, so...
You can wait with it. It's...
He can still turn up.
Yeah. Mostly he's here because I think it's a funny opportunity for him to tell Bidrhi about Tum Dorji.
Yeah. Okay.
Since both were mentioned.
How about the Shere
Khatam? You can save your downtime action if you want.
I'm going to go talk to Alkadir, sir, and you can hang back in the shadows like the cool, mysterious badass that you are, learning a lot from Sister Moss. I know, I can see that. Wonder where she goes at night. Anyway, I'm going to go talk to him, and you can, I don't know, hang back in the shadows and observe, or you can come hang out and listen to us. Whatever works for you, okay? But don't worry too much about this man. I mean, he's just Alkadir, sir. Maybe you are buying into the bullshit by thinking he's a suspicious and important person.
Okay. I think that's a good point. I think that actually does make Mushfiq think a bit like, maybe. All right. I think in that case, Mushfiq will just hang back and just listen.
Okay. So your plan is to use your downtime action to finish this clock by observing him.
Okay.
Fair enough. You come down and you see Alkadir looking in high spirits as ever. He has brought with him some papers, and as he sees Bidruhi, he fumbles around in his vest and he pulls out a small packet of raisins. And he says, "Ah, brother, just the person I wanted to see. Here, have a snack. Make sure you are hydrated, that you're sitting down, and that you are prepared for some challenging questions, little brother. Very challenging."
Sir understands the fundamental basics of nutrition, which is more than I can say for most people in this house. And I take the raisins because, dried fruit is pretty cool. That's hard to find as well.
Yep.
We have some water and some tea.
The legitimacy of these raisins is probably questionable because Alkadir is not the most discerning fellow, but it's something dried. And he...
Let's not go there.
Yes. You know, what with food in the Shattered Isles, there's a lot of substitution and surrogates and things. But anyway, he sits down and he says, "I am under the impression that a little while ago, Saida Aunty was... He was having a meeting with a very esteemed lawyer by the name of Hardil Subramanian. Do you think he'd be willing to work with us?" He says with a big beaming smile.
No, I don't think so. This, sir, this man was not a good person. He was not worthy, and I relieved him of his Muchi shoes as soon as I could. Okay, it's done with. He is no. I mean, maybe he's a good lawyer, but he's not a good human being.
Oh, you don't happen to know any lawyers whose shoes you haven't stolen?
No.
He says as he looks over the papers.
Now that you mention it, sir, every lawyer I've met, I've stolen their shoes.
Ah, a pity. You see, it's about our mutual friend Tumturji. He's in a small spot of trouble, and I...
What? What do you mean? Tumturji in trouble? I slam the table.
He may have been possibly handling some shadow silk without a license, or at least he stands accused of it, I am sure. That it is all falsehood, all slander. Only House Anrakis may trade in, or their trusted colleagues and associates, it says here somewhere, may trade in, possess, and he like shows you a list that goes like trade in, possess, hold, carry, like just lists a bunch of verbs of what no one else but them is allowed to do with Shadow Silk. I'm sure there is no evidence of him having done any work with it. He does not have a license for it. The house has seized his workshop. I'm trying to get him out of this situation, but at the moment, the poor man has no income. I'm afraid he's unable to work. And so I'm also going around gathering some donations, he says, and he takes up a little tin that he has for collecting money for community projects.
But what is this nonsense, sir? I mean, and I think, you know, I'm so upset that I'm just going to say, Sherekatam was in here asking about you and Shadow Silk just 5 minutes ago, and he's over there now. You can see Sherekatam. He's like poking his head around the table and like trying to look and say, hello, Sherekatam. He's right here. Come and talk to him. Sherekatam was talking about the Shadow Silk 5 minutes ago, and now you're talking about the Shadow Silk and Tumturji. And how can Tumturji be accused of trying to traffic in Shadow Silk? He has spoken about how it is gosh and overrated as a fabric. And if that is not cast iron proof that this man would never be seen caught dead handling Shadow Silk, I do not know what is. Sir, what is going on? Sherekatam, come!
What is going on is... And I think, Sherekatam, do you want to spend your downtime action figuring him out here?
Because why not? This seems like as good an opportunity as any. So I was in the... Wardrobe,
yeah.
Was I?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just gonna fall out of,
the lion from the wardrobe.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm just gonna fall out in a landslide of clothes and go, yes. Yeah.
He looks over and he says, oh, my word. And he looks startled. And I think you don't actually have to do an action here because you only have one tick left. So if you spend your downtime action, you will finish this project. And I think the way I'm gonna spin it is... you will figure out Alkader because the stress will actually get to him in this moment. I think that's the interesting way to interpret this project.
Also, before you do that, I think I'm already said at the same time as I'm basically giving the whole game away, saying that Sherekatam is suspicious of you and so on. I am also looking through the papers and rifling through them, and I think we said that the houses issued this order, right?
Yeah.
But the houses don't do it all as a joint. It's usually one house that does it.
It's House Anrakis.
The hyena looking at me and laughing.
Yeah. Yep. It's Anish Anrakis. And Clem happens to have a token to go have a chat with them, it turns out. So you could go do that.
Anish Anrakis.
Mm-hmm.
This is a thing. Was Salty here for Anish Anrakis? Well, Salty was here for Anish Anrakis. Yes. Okay.
I believe so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were.
Were you salty?
Yes.
It just happened at a good time. If I was, I was.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So, you rifle through the papers. Mushfik falls out of the closet. And Alkader gets a distant look in his eyes. And I think what happens here is, with this figure out project, his bullshit will actually, for once, for the first time you've seen him, fail him. And his smile drops, and he goes, Oh, this lawyer was, I'm afraid, sort of my last plan. I am at my wit's end, brothers. Tumdurji is a good friend and a dear member of the community, but I have only a few copper coins in my tin, and I haven't been able to get him legal representation. I am sorry. I'm sorry I could not
so,
fix this.
And I think I can tell that he's for real, right? Because he's not trying to bullshit. He's not doing the usual bullshit.
No, he really is. I mean, Tumdurji is probably one of his close friends too, right? And also, he is a pillar of the community and all.
Yeah.
And he looks like crestfallen.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I'm going to give Sherekatam a reproachful look mm-hmm. as I kind of like get up and I give Alkadir a hug.
Mm-hmm.
How dare you accuse this man!
Yeah, he hugs you back and he says, like, listen, I wish there was more I could do. I'm sorry to have bothered you about this lawyer thing.
Don't worry. Sherekatam, you also come in here. It is a difficult time for everyone. We're losing people left and right. Saida Aunty is sick. Tumdurji is currently having to... We have to... Look, even the hat that we are collecting the coin in is not a stylish hat that he would appreciate. Uh-huh. Okay?
Yeah. Yep.
But I have a plan, brothers. I have a plan. May I tell you this plan? And I look at Sherekatam as though he gives a shit about Tumdurji.
Uh-huh.
And that he's emotionally invested in what happens with Tumdurji.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Tumdurji, I mean, he is a man who should be practicing on the highest of streets and all that. So, of course, we need to get him back his formal business license and all of these things. But it is absolute crime that this man needs to be begging for scraps when he should be working and doing his very best to make people look fly as fucking hell. Okay? That is his calling in life. That's what he said. I'm quoting him directly, which I'm not. So here is my proposal. We have Rising Moon Sword School. Lots of badass brothers, sisters, and other siblings. And people are coming at us and hassling us. What we need is to look sick as shit. What we need is an in-house tailor.
All right, look, Mushrik might be on the road to recovery, but yeah, I think this is. I think I might have to untick.
It's done. I will go speak to him immediately.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. So, Peter, well,
it does. It doesn't not make sense.
Yeah, I mean, it will cost you a bunch of coin and stuff if you're really planning on doing this. But
yeah,
but,
yes,
Peter is heading out speaking to him. But I think this gives an interesting moment for Alkadir to actually be like frank with Mushfik as this happens, right? Because he has not heard that Sherekatam is suspicious of him. And so, as Peter, he leaves, he, like, collects his papers, and he's, like, quiet at the moment, as he thinks over, like, okay, I couldn't make this work, Peter, he has some harebrained plan, maybe that will work. And he looks up at Mushfik, and he says, you know, the feeling was initially mutual, so I don't blame you for being suspicious. Back home, I was not on the best terms with the freedom fighters, as it were, but water under the bridge,
Here close the doors to the House of Endings. Those who dwell within are Soheb, called Claude, Adiat, called Soap, Samitri, called Tree, Salty, and Emma. I have been Prince, your host. Our City of Uduasha is based on Blades in the Dark by John Harper and Evil Hat Productions, with special thanks to Johnstone Metzger. Follow us on Twitter or support us on ko-fi.com/desperateattune. If you want to engage further with us, we also have a Patreon at patreon.com/desperateattune, where you will get our newsletter, extra content, and updates from Uduasha.
Next time on Desperate Attune.
A future for our people should have been decided by our people, not by our people held at gunpoint.
Yes, but we were. We were held at gunpoint.
And only some of us tried to turn those guns back.